Welcome to Step Into Magic, your weekly online radio show on how to develop your psychic ability, deepen your spirituality, and find your own true purpose, presented by acclaimed medical intuitive, Josephine Lang. This broadcast is a part of the Wisdom and Intuition Network at metaphysicalwisdom.com. This is Anthony Taylor, your host, and on behalf of Josephine, I'll be taking your calls and questions. For those of you who are new to our show, Josephine has been a clairvoyant healer for more than 25 years. During that time, she's helped thousands of people from around the world to heal from hard-to-diagnose and chronic health issues. She has also been a teacher and spiritual mentor for hundreds of people who treasure her insights, courage, and love.
Hello, everyone. Tonight's topic is tuning into the Earth's energies as a means to increase our psychic skills. And this topic is really close to my heart. Plants and rocks and animals have been my primary teachers. And instead of seeking instruction in psychic ability, I just let it arise spontaneously from within me. And that way, the way that I encouraged this was to just spend time out in nature for myself. So I'm kind of a self-taught psychic. And sometimes the nature was just my own backyard. And talking to rocks and finding water underground and calling the rain, these are all things that any of us can do. And it's my hope that you'll have some fun doing this yourself, because I sure enjoyed it. And our collective body of humanity awakens to these qualities for the greater good of us all. So I really encourage you to enjoy this exploration on your own. But before I go into these topics any further, I always like to begin our show with a spiritual agreement. And this was a gift from my mentor and friend, Jana Massey. And she encouraged us all to use this in our interrelations. And I think it's a wonderful agreement to make. So thank you all for joining me in this agreement right now. And it goes like this. Together, we acknowledge that everything that we think, that we say, and that we do at this time will be of the highest good. And together we ask for truth, the understanding of that truth, and the wisdom to use it in our lives. Can you all agree?
I do.
Yay. Thank you, Tony, and thank you, everyone, for joining us in that.
Josephine, Alita from North Carolina wrote in with a lovely message for you during the week. She writes, "Dear Josephine, you are most certainly in your right place, doing exactly the right thing at just the perfect time. Bravo. With all love, Alita."
Thank you so much, Alita. You're so sweet, and that really makes me feel wonderful. Tony and I love it when you write into us.
Thank you, Josephine. We also received a really interesting question from Luciana. But before that, I'd just like to share with everyone my synchronicity from the homework assignment that you set us all last week. I don't think it's fully played out yet, but it's well on its way. After the astrology show last week, I was thinking about Boulder, Colorado, and this particular man who's an astrologer that I know called Bob, who lives there. And a few years ago, he did my natal chart, and he started explaining it to me, but he never had a chance to finish it, and I haven't seen him since. And then I got to thinking about my friend Sonu, because Bob, who happens to be a Jungian therapist, had told me that he really wants to meet Sonu and have lunch with him. Well, anyway, then I got an email from my friend Tim about a oneness summit that he's going to be part of, which is hosted by a man that I met in Boulder called Steve when I was with Tim and Bob. And Tim, Sonia, and I have been pals since we were in college. Then earlier today, I saw that Josephine got an email about the oneness summit. And then today, I got an email from Tim saying that he's thinking of going back to Boulder to run a retreat. Now, I'm not exactly sure how it all fits together, but I think there's some kind of a pattern forming which involves Boulder, Colorado, my Jungian friends, and oneness. So I'll keep you posted as it plays out.
That's really wonderful, Tony. And it certainly is shaping up nicely, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Frank had a nice synchronicity, too, this past week that he shared with me. It's just a little one, but it's very sweet. He and a friend have been thinking of going up to Esalen to volunteer in the gardens there. And yesterday, Frank suggested to him that they go up next Tuesday. And his friend was delighted with the idea and said that Tuesday is his birthday and that he'd really love to do that with Frank to celebrate the day. Isn't that a lovely little one?
Yeah, that's really beautiful.
Yeah, I'm sure they're going to have a wonderful time together. And, you know, our synchronicities can also be really simple like that. You know, yours are wonderful in that they're so involved. I really love them. But it's nice also to realize that it can just be as simple as two ideas coming together with a nice little surprise at the end.
Yes, that's so true. Yeah, and some of mine have been a little bit involved and elaborate. But, you know, I've also had some really simple ones too.
Good.
So anyway, let me get back to the letter from Luciana.
Oh, yes.
She writes, "Hi, love your show. Thank you, Josephine." And then, "I get how the cells of our body, the blood, muscles, that part of nature is showing itself in me. But where is nature in our thoughts? Is it just the firing of neurons? Can you help me understand how nature literally moves us down the road of life individually and collectively?"
Well, thank you, Luciana. Yes, absolutely. The body, the blood, the muscles, that's all nature showing itself to us. It's also in the firing of the neurons. And then there's also telepathy. Have you ever been thinking of someone and then suddenly they call and there you are on the phone with them? That just happened to me right before the show. That's a part of our human nature, and the same happens with all of nature. We are constantly exchanging thoughts. Plants let us know that they need watering. They also know when we're thinking of cutting them back. And suddenly we find ourselves thinking about the goldfish in the pond because they're thinking about us. We follow these thought form requests and find ourselves going places and doing things. Most often, we simply mistakenly think that they're our own thoughts. But if we take the time, we can discover within ourselves the various tones and subtle nuances that can let us know when a thought has arisen from within ourselves or when a thought has entered from an external source. And this is a really fun thing to practice, and I think it's a good thing for us to do to develop our psychic skills. So you might want to see if you can identify any thoughts that have a slightly different signature from your own this week. So let's let that be our homework assignment. See if you can notice the subtle nuances of a thought that has arisen in your mind coming from an external source. And then compare the feelings that you have around those thoughts, which might be quite subtle, with the feelings that you have around thoughts that you're quite sure are exclusively your own. That'll be fun for all of us to try. And this, in part, is how nature moves us down the road of life individually. But it also moves us collectively. The first Earth Day, you know, in 1970 was in direct response, I feel, to nature's calls for our human awakening. The term water pollution had just been coined, and air pollution as well, and the first whisperings of awareness about global warming and the depletion of the ozone layer came into our awareness. And this happened at the same time as the animals, the plants, and the phytoplankton in the sea were presenting themselves in direct communication, both physically and also mind to mind. So by physically, I mean that, you know, we could see that there were problems that were going on with the animals or with the plants. And then we could also feel it or get whisperings about that as well. So these events all resulted in our collective response to nature's calls, and the ideas of respect and concern for nature were born in the Western mind. It's sort of like if your big toe is hurting, you listen, maybe not right away, but eventually it gets a little louder until you do. And part of it is physical. Part of it is a deeper inner knowing, and the message gets through to you. And you know what you have to do. So with that, Tony, maybe you can show our first slide, which is a beautiful quote by Ralph Waldo Emerson. And he says, "When nature has work to be done, she creates a genius to do it."
Isn't that a lovely thought?
I know, I love that one.
Josephine, I just have one question about the homework assignment.
Yes.
And you talk about the distinction between a thought that's arising within us, which is our own, and a thought that's arriving within us, which is from an external source.
Yes.
I'm just trying to get a sense of, could you perhaps give me an example of how I'm going to make that distinction? Is it using my feelings?
Yeah, so let's say that you just suddenly started thinking about, it was just Earth Day the other day, so maybe you just suddenly started thinking about the Earth Day Fair, and you say something like, "Gosh, you know, I wonder if the Earth Day Fair is going on this weekend." And then Chloe, your wife, might have said, "You know, I was just thinking about that." So one of you had that thought originally, and
mm-hmm.
the other one picked it up.
Mm-hmm.
And Frank and I do this all the time, where we'll have, you know, we say, oh, I was just thinking that too. And that's not an uncommon experience for us in our relationships. And so then what you want to do is try to get a feeling for, you know, and were you the first one to start thinking of it? Or did you pick that up from somebody who was walking by on the sidewalk just a few minutes before, and then you passed it on to Chloe, you know, sort of how it can be. And the same thing will happen, like, I'll often be sitting at my desk working and doing things, and suddenly I just find myself getting up and watering the plants. And I almost didn't even think about it. It's like I didn't think, gee, I should water the plants now. It's more like I'm working and I just find myself getting up and getting the water pitcher, and I think, ah, somebody was talking to me, you know.
Oh, I get the idea, because sometimes mm-hmm. I'll suddenly get the feeling of, oh, I need to phone up somebody.
Yeah.
And so what you're saying is that may have actually come from them.
It may have.
They may have
mm-hmm.
sent the thought to me, you
mm-hmm.
know, it's about time you gave me a call.
Yeah.
You've been forgetting me or whatever it is.
Right,
oh,
right.
I see.
So I think this is especially easy for us to do with our children.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, the children, and we are very closely connected, or else a really close friend or a spouse, we get very closely connected with them. And you can also play around with it a little bit, too, like try to send a message, you know, like let's say Chloe's at work and she needs a ride, you know, she can try to just give you that vibe, you know, and send it off to you and see if you can pick it up.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, we're very familiar with sort of pushing those thoughts away, but we can actually scoop them up and catch them too.
Right.
So,
thank
yeah.
you.
Yeah. So then there's also a shared higher self aspect to all of this, in further answer to your question, Luciana. And it's as if there are common oversouls. You know, this is referring back to, you know, how is it that nature literally moves us down the road of life? And I think that there's this sort of like, well, for instance, I'll use one that I commonly tap into, which is that there's like a collective higher self for house cats. And additionally, there's a collective higher self for, say, lions. And there's also a collective higher self for the entire genus of felines worldwide. And we can tap into these layers of oversouls. And some of us are naturally more sensitive and thus more easily able to do this than others. But with practice and with, you know, belief and intention, we can all do it. And we can also tap into our higher human self. And going up collectively, we can tap into our primate higher self, that group that we're a part of, and then even into the higher self of the entire animal kingdom of which we are all a part. Then as well, we can tap into the higher self of all of life. And when we do, we've entered into a collective that we share with the living world, and it goes on from there. We can enter into a collective with the animate and the inanimate wisdoms of the world. The word geomancy, have you heard of that word?
Oh, I have, yes.
Yeah, it describes the esoteric art of working with the living energies of the land, and observing the ley lines and the power centers and arranging our own habitation and interactions accordingly. So we can tap in on that level into the Gaia energy or into the plant's consciousness and telepathically communicate, send, and receive information with the earth. So think of that impact that that first photograph of the earth taken from outer space had on all of us. I have a little picture of that in my healing room because it just reminds me of this beautiful golden blue and green jewel that we live on that's out there in space. And when we first saw that image come back from outer space in the 60s, we suddenly understood in a way that we really hadn't before the vulnerability of our planet out there all alone in space. And we also collectively understood our dependency on that planet. And taking it even further, you know, we can receive and give this kind of communication with the universe as well, should we choose. It's all only just a thought away. All we need to do is free ourselves from our self-imposed limitations and beliefs, the ones that hold us back from doing so. So, you know, we can try this right now if you'd like. So let's try to do a little exercise in just a minute. And let's start by, we're going to prepare for the exercise by taking a moment to imagine that you are one of those little microscopic mites on somebody's eyebrow. you may already know that there are these little tiny beings all over our bodies, inside and out, and that we're barely aware of them. Yet we do commune with them all day, every day. The perfect example that I like to use is, you know, we all have so many bacteria, and, you know, I think the statistics recently came out in some of the, you know, science news magazines, and even I think I saw an article in The Economist about how many trillion cells inside of us are us and how many trillions of cells inside of us are actually belong to separate, unique individual beings. And there was, you know, some pretty stiff competition going on inside of our bodies. And all of those cells have consciousness of a sort, and all of them have a mind, and they can have a group mind. And this is especially true if we have bigger organisms like parasites in us. And so, you know, in most of the world, people understand that we need to be clean on the inside as well as clean on the outside. And here in the Western world, we think, oh, if we've showered and washed our hair, we're perfectly clean. But yet we sit on the same sofas with cats and dogs. I know that's kind of a slightly unpleasant thought to think that, you know, if they have parasites and we're treating them for parasites, but yet we're not treating ourselves. So much of the world has a deeper understanding than we do in the West about the importance of, you know, taking all kinds of parasite cleansing herbs and things. So papaya seeds in small measure, and oh, watermelon seeds and watermelon in general, or you know, pumpkin seeds is another one that's quite common. And, of course, cayenne pepper. A lot of countries use a lot of chili peppers, and that really basically invites the parasites to leave the body. But the point that I'm trying to make here is that, for instance, if I walk past a candy counter and I start noticing my eyeballs starting to look at the candy and there's parts inside of me that are saying, ooh, yeah, go for that, you know, I'm thinking, now who's talking here? You know, because a lot of those little bacteria and parasites, of course, they love the sugar.
Mm.
And, you know, so who's in charge of this boat? So sometimes that's, anyway, that's, I think they all get very excited and encourage us telepathically to, you know, go ahead and have something like that, like some sugar or something, something that they'd love.
Josephine, we've received a question or a comment from Ed, which relates to this. And he writes, Josephine, I'm not sure that I can identify a thought that could arise only from within myself.
Yes, that's probably a really good point, Ed, because like I said, we have so many trillions of beings that are sharing our actual physical bodies with us that it might be very difficult to identify a thought that arises only from within ourselves. But what I've done in my life is I've practiced sort of the larger scope of that. You know, is this a thought that is coming out of that sense of I am or pure Josephine-ness, or does it have whispers of an opinion of somebody that I heard on the radio the other day, or a political belief or a thought system, or is it coming out of one of those archetypes like we discussed last month, you know, like the archetype of the trickster or the teacher or the saboteur or whatever. There can be kind of group minds along those lines as well that can kind of catch us up in the river of their energy, and we can wind up flowing downstream with them. So I just try to pay attention to the quality. And part of what has really helped me with this, Ed, was I was able to take some time to remember my birth. And when I remembered my birth, I remembered that distinct sort of a signature that I came in with before I really was even fully embodied in the womb, when I was mostly just Josephine consciousness. And at that time, it, of course, didn't have the name of Josephine. It was just the I am consciousness of who I am. And then, of course, there is the wider consciousness of we are. And so they're both at play all the time. But with a little practice, we can try to delineate just what is just me.
Mm, I think I have a strong sense of that, or I did. I think in my childhood, I had a much stronger sense of that. And so maybe it would be really useful for me to meditate on that and try and reclaim some of that sense.
Yes, that's a really good idea. And I think that that's it, an excellent way for us to begin this journey, is to think back in childhood at times when we really felt the zest of who we are, that really personal identification of who we are. Another way to go about this is to remember a time that you really felt on top of the world, or really in your own personal power, standing tall, when you really felt the sense of yourself. And so if you can take a moment to just, remember a time like that, and then I like to think of an image that's associated with that. Like maybe it was me as a child standing on a little hilltop on the beach wearing a red cape, you know, and I think, okay, I remember that moment. I really felt myself. And then hold that image. And then maybe take a moment to feel where in your body you feel that. So for me, that little image that comes up, it's in my heart. I feel this raised chest and this sense of love of place and person and beingness. And then you might even think of a sound or something that goes with that. And, you know, it might be a yippee or whatever it is, you know. That helps us to ground that sense of I am-ness, of who I am, into ourselves, to just sort of take it a little bit further, to hold on to it there. Yeah. So, and then we were just talking about that microcosm of these little beings inside of us, and if we take it to the macrocosm, we can think about these larger flowing patterns of wind and water that's on our planet's surface. So let's just imagine that for a moment, that wind and that water that's moving on the planet, and to realize that these are like the air that we breathe and the water that we drink moving into and through our bodies, only they're moving into and through the body of the earth. So with this in mind now, let's go ahead and do our exercise. So if you'd like to just relax and take a breath, a nice soft and easy breath or two, and then close your eyes if you'd like, and of course save this exercise for later if you happen to be driving a car or operating any machinery. And then go ahead and open your mind with love and with respect and with allowance, and telepathically just send a message to the earth. Now let yourself receive a response and take the first thought that pops into your head. Let a message come to you from this beautiful emerald green and blue and gold planet that we live on. And take a moment to jot down what you received. And then allow yourself to return to your normal waking consciousness. You can stretch and just kind of allow yourself to become present back in the room. And with that, I'd like to move on to our next slide. And this is a quote from, I have a very dear friend and neighbor who studied with a Peruvian shaman, and his name was Dari Kikin. And I've shared this slide before, but I just think that it's so significant. And she shared this quote with me. And the quote goes, "Believing invites the spirits in." When we allow ourselves to believe, we really invite the spirit world to join with us, to commune with us. And spirit is all around us all the time. You know, so many of us who have experienced death, we know that spirit is with us when we feel the presence of our loved ones and we find ourselves crying or bursting into tears. That's because they're there with us. Or if we feel the guidance that comes through from, you know, and shortly after my mother died when I was very young, I would often feel her guidance. And so my friend and neighbor Amalia, who, you know, she called in a few weeks ago, and she shares so many beautiful things from her friend Dari Kikin, who she studied with in the rainforest there for many years. And Dari Kikin, she's told me, has kind of had a foot in both worlds as it was appropriate. So he not only was a shaman who was, when he was in the jungle, he would wear paper bark clothes and things like that, but he would also come into the town, and he was a teacher there. And Amalia shared with us when she called this one really wonderful, simple truth that Dari Kikin told her. And perhaps you can show the next slide for us, Tony.
Certainly.
And the slide says that the plants are our doctors, the animals are practical teachers, and the rocks speak to us of the heart. And he also said, and she shared with us on that show when she called in, that there's a book that was not written, which we can learn from, and that book is nature. Isn't that a beautiful quote?
Yeah, that's really, really nice.
Yeah.
Yes. And Josephine, as you're talking about that and the plants, it's reminding me that I once knew something about a plant that's called Sativa divinorum. Mm-hmm. It's a hallucinogenic plant from Oaxaca, I think I pronounced that correctly, in Mexico. And it's really significant because you ask the plant a question, and then you smoke some of the plant, and then the answer comes to you. And the local indigenous people believe that it's an incarnation of the Mother Mary. And this plant is also known as seer's sage. And so the local people treat it with a great deal of respect, and they use it in spiritual healing ceremonies. Now, I'm remembering that I went to one of your Communing with Plants workshops quite some time ago now. And each one of us on the course, we each chose a plant or a tree or something to commune with. So are you saying that we can receive messages from any kind of plant? It doesn't have to be a plant with particular properties. It could be, for example, a blade of grass or a tree. It's more important that we feel a connection with the plant?
Yes, that's very, very true. And the way that I like to describe it, when I'm going out in nature to receive some messages from nature or some guidance or some assistance with whatever I'm working on, I'll walk around the garden and I'll look for a plant that might be winking at me, as it were, mm-hmm. since you get kind of a sense about it, or maybe a little light is sparkling off it in a certain way. My darling husband, Frank, he's got a thing with plants where he can be sitting looking at a landscape and there's not a puff of breeze anywhere, and one leaf will just start waving at him, saying, hello there, how are you? That's the plant to talk to. And then what I like to do is go up to the plant and ask its permission. And so I usually touch it, and I use my left hand, which is my receiving hand. And, you know, our right hand is our giving hand, and our left is our receiving. And so then I ask permission, and I try to get a sense of, you know, if that's okay if I talk with that plant. And so you might want to try this sometime on your own this week. And perhaps you could show us the next slide there, Tony. This one is a quote from William Wordsworth. And he says, come forth into the light of things. Let nature be your teacher. I love that quote.
Oh, I love that quote. Josephine, we've had another question come in. This one is from Mary, and she writes, when people are suffering and we hear about their plight, are we really sad because we hear about their suffering, or are we experiencing their pain as our pain?
Well, I think it's both. So, you know, we are all one, and one of the stories that Joseph Campbell tells that I think is so touching is about a man who is walking along the Golden Gate Bridge late one night, and he sees that there's a person who's out there on the edge, and he's about to jump. And the man goes ahead and immediately, you know, shimmies out there on the edge with him and starts to talk to him and calm him down, calm the person who is about to commit suicide down, and talk him back down off the ledge. Well, when he goes out there, he's taking tremendous risk on his own behalf. He's not thinking about the wife and kids at home. He's not thinking about his job or his dad hasn't gotten that life insurance policy yet. None of that. He's just like, we and the other are one, and to let that person die would be to let a part of ourselves die. And so, yes, Mary, I think that we are very much empathetic and that we do pick up a lot of their plight and their suffering. But we can also just use our intellect and listen and just hear and know from our own responses in our own lives how we have had similar situations occur, and we can tap into our own history. And this is what actors and actresses do a lot when they are performing. And they need to call up a certain emotion for a scene. We can store our emotions. Our subconscious mind will allow us to store our emotions and bring them forward at an appropriate time or whenever we have need. And that's what actors and actresses do. They bring up emotions that might have arisen. So, yeah, and very good question, Mary. Thank you so much for that. So,
One moment, Josephine,
yes?
If you don't mind. We have a caller on the line from San Luis Obispo.
Oh, lovely.
Is now a good time for a call?
Yes, this is a great time for a call.
Hi, Josephine. Hi, Tony. This is Amalia. And,
Amalia.
Hi,
again. Thank you for calling. How nice to hear
yes.
your voice again today.
Yes, of course. I love your show, Josephine, and I just feel
Thanks.
The urge to keep adding some thoughts, some lessons that I have learned with Derek Kikin, with this jungle teacher.
Oh, yes, please. Thank you.
If you Yeah, if you allow me to tell you a lovely story about the birds, how they represent our human spiritual growth. You know, when we come to this lifetime, it is like coming to a school, and we pick up wherever we were, you know, and the last from the last one. So I have this lovely story of the seven birds that it kind of show us our spiritual growth, talking about animals that they're our teachers, you know?
Beautiful, Amalia. We would love to hear it. Thank you so much.
Okay. So this is how it goes. You know, since we are considered like human beings, we are mind, spirit, and body, and we need to feed all those areas. We are more than that. But anyway, you know, I think we all agree. You don't need to be a spiritual person to agree on that. But at some point in our lives, we become interested in what is spirituality. And this, you know, the birds come this way. So the first stage is represented by the hummingbird, the little tiny hummingbird, you know, that keeps moving and searching and tasting from many flowers that encounters, and you know, going from flower to flower. So that represents when somebody is interested in spiritual life. It may happen to be going to, you know, talks maybe, or reading books that it will get their attention, or talking to people, or listening to your show. It's like, wow, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So from different sources, like the hummingbird, you know?
Yeah.
Searching and tasting. That's the first stage of spiritual growth. The second stage is represented by the kestrel, the American kestrel. It's like a type of hawk, a small bird. And, this bird flies, and it has a particular thing that hovers, right? Well, probably many of us have seen a kestrel hovering, you know. It kind of stops in the air because it knows what he wants, and whenever he sees something and dives in to get it, whatever he wants, you know, it's normally a prey. So this is representing that as the kestrel that hovers. So the person will be more, you know, kind of, oh my gosh, this really get my attention, you know, oh, this Indian teacher, you know, whatever he's saying, or this yoga classes. It really gets, you know, interested in one thing, you know, or maybe two things, you know. It's not the hummingbird anymore. It's the kestrel.
Yeah.
It dives and gets what it wants, you know. That's the second one. The third one, it is represented by the seagull. You know, these social birds that they are in the oceans or also in the rivers of the Amazon jungle. Of course, you know, this was... you know, this knowledge was given to me by a Amazonian person, so he is telling me the birds that he knows, you know.
Yes.
The seagull lives in flocks, you know, in groups, sees for others. It's social, you know, and they live together, sees of others of their kind, and this represents in the human being, like, you look for your kind. Now you suddenly, you know, you talk to people, you want to be in groups, you want to go to lectures, to be with your kind, with your spiritual family. Find that spiritual family, you know?
Beautiful,
but you feel protected, you can speak that language.
Yeah.
You know, so that's the seagull, finding your community, your spiritual community. The fourth bird is represented by... the macaw, and that has the ability, it represents beauty, but also represents a partner. And, you know, flies in pairs when they are taking care of the baby, the little one. There you see three macaws, you know, all the time until they he found a pair, a mate, and he goes, but normally you see two, and just showing the beauty and the voice, it talks.
Oh, yeah.
You know? So yeah. As a parent, it's teaching, it is talking, it is not just, you know, the parent for the children, but for the community. It has voice, it has beauty, you know?
Great.
And the fifth one will be the egret or the heron. You know, we see those white snowy egrets, the greater egrets, or the herons, you know, the blue heron and blah, blah, blah. And this represents serenity, contemplation, meditation. It knows of patience, little effort, and precise timing to catch its prey, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And this is where it represents the one in the spiritual path after being the hummingbird, the kestrel, the seagull, the macaw. Now it looks for solitude. It looks for contemplation because the work, you have to do it alone, you know.
Yeah,
and, then the sixth stage is the eagle stage. The eagle represents beauty, majesty, wisdom, but it has ego. You know, even though we're growing, but ego is huge, and, you know, you think you made it, you know, but this is the kind of last fight against that ego on us, being the ego, to graduate into the seventh level, which is represented by the condor, you know. The condor is a vulture. It's not beautiful. It's ugly bird, you know. But it flies very, very high. It goes over the clouds. And the condor represent the ultimate stage, no ego, and it's a garbage picker. It cleans garbage. You know, it cleans the environment. It's a teacher. It cleans the students. It cleans, it helps. It's a healer, you know. It's a big healer without showing this is who I am, you know. So those are the stages, and we might be able to become all the way up to the condor in one lifetime. Maybe not, you know. But wherever we are, being the hummingbird or the kestrel, wherever we are. And the other day I was talking to a lovely, lovely spiritual person, a lady. We were hiking, and she said, Amalia, I don't know what is happening lately. I've been seeing those white tall birds in my house. And she lives in the country. And I said, what white tall? Those huge birds, you know, they just are quiet. I said, those are egrets. Oh, so I told her this story. And she said, she just cried. And she said, oh my gosh, that's where I am. That's the stage, you know, where I am, the egret, the spot, you know.
Oh, that's beautiful.
So thank you.
Great. Oh, Amalia, thank you so much for calling in with that beautiful wisdom.
Of course. You are
really
doing such a great job, Justine.
So generous of you to share. It's beautiful.
I will do it anytime, as many times I can. I will do it. Okay. Thank you so much again.
Sure. Bye-bye. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Gosh, that was lovely. How nice. Well, I was just about to jump into an exercise, I'll do that right now. And this is an exercise to help us get in touch with a yes or a no, so that if we do go out into nature to talk with the plants or the animals or whatever, we can kind of be sure to ask permission, and then we can get a sense of if it's a good thing for us to go ahead and engage. It's just polite. You know, I find that most always I'll get a yes. But every once in a while, I'll get a no, and it's very fruitful usually for me. There's somebody else who's really needing to talk to me out there in nature that I need to commune with. So the way that I like to teach people how to get started with getting that sense of a yes or a no is to just think of your own name. So my name is Josephine, and Your name is Tony, and Amalia's name is Amalia. And then think of a different name, like, for instance, Penelope. So I might think, okay, is my name Penelope? And I try that on. I try on that statement. My name is Penelope. Now, I know that it's not. My name is actually Josephine. So I think, all right, how does that feel in my stomach, in my gut, or in my heart, or wherever? And I can sort of feel a little bit of a sense of like, not that. And then I say, okay, my name is Josephine. And then, yeah, there's kind of a relaxing in my skeleton or in the muscles of my body, or just a sort of a sense of, yeah, that feels right. And so that's the little exercise. So why don't we try that right now? So starting with a name that's not your own, in mind, have that in mind. And then relax and take a couple of nice and easy breaths. And just ask that question, you know, or not ask the question, but just make the statement. My name is, and then whatever the name is that's not your own. And see how that feels in your body. See if there's any kind of sensation or where it is. And then go ahead and now say your own actual name and say, my name is whatever it is, your name. And see how that feels in your body. And I was sharing this exercise this morning with a friend of mine, and you can go ahead and get, you know, see a feeling there. But she had another way of doing it, which is that she stands up and she finds out if she's sort of leaning forward, slightly tipping forward, that's more of a yes, or slightly leaning backwards, that's more of a no for her. So we can try that rendition as well. So I encourage you to practice this week, if you can, and then so once you get a kind of a yes feeling, to move out into the garden and check it out there. And that's sort of how I started. I just thought, you know, how in the world did all of these ancient peoples figure out which plants were medicinal and which plants weren't? And so I just went out into the garden and sat down with, there was one plant that I knew, Hypericum. It was, I thought, I think this is a medicinal. This was, you know, 30 years ago or so. And I sat down with it, and sure enough, all of this information started to just sort of pour into me about how it felt and what I felt about it, you know, just like what its possibilities were. And then I, you know, back then I would still doubt myself, and so I went into the medicinal textbooks and looked it up, and sure enough, I had all of the information pretty much that it had had in the book, and it was fairly accurate about not, you know, about helping us with depression or easing us from pain. But I also got a little information about making the stomach feel better. And not in all of the texts on Hypericum, but one of the texts had something about it being a great, you know, stomachache reliever. I thought, well, look at that. And it turned out that the plant that I was actually asking of was not the one that we use for medicinal purposes. It's a close cousin, what you would call a horticultural variety that's used in the landscape. But still, these plants are close cousins, and they do share a lot of the same traits. And so our medicinal plants are usually a much stronger variety of whatever healing modality they share with us, but also the ones that are commercial varieties can also include some of those wonderful traits and qualities. So that was how I got started, and I thought, you know, this is pretty simple and pretty fun, and why don't we do more of this? And it's, you know, it's the same with all of nature, with rocks and with animals. And one of the things that happened to me was I was very attracted to rutilated quartz, to the stone. And I found out that it helps with psychic ability. So I found, you know, I decided after I'd had this big injury to just sit down with it, and I had not too much else going on, so I spent time communing with this rock, and before I knew it, I could begin to feel little vibrations or sensations, and the rock was suggesting little ideas to me. And, you know, this is where we get back to kind of Ed's question a little bit more about, you know, how can we identify which thought is mine? And in a way, what these do is they help us to connect in with our own higher self through the modality or through the tool or through the flavor of, you know, the plant or of the stone or whatever it might be. But it also helps us to tap into what Jung used to refer to as the collective unconscious, or the Vedic idea of that bubbling up from the whole of humanity, how there are certain understandings and principles that can come. And so we can use these as avenues to allow us to access that higher or deeper aspect of ourselves, but yet we have it coming through the flavor of rutilated quartz, or through the flavor of Hypericum, or through the flavor of Josephine, or through the flavor of Ed. And so that's sort of how it happens, I think. And I'd like to recommend a couple of books that I've really enjoyed. And I found these books years later after I began the exploration and sort of made my own way. But it was just so nice to find them, because I was like, oh, I'm not alone. You know, there are other people who are out there doing this sort of stuff. And the first one that I always love to recommend is called Talking with Nature, and it's by Michael Rhodes, R-O-A-D-S. And then the next one is called Plant Spirit Medicine, and it's by Elliot Cohen, C-O-W-A-N, Plant Spirit Medicine. And then also I love the Heart Math Solution by Doc Childre and Howard Martin. Wonderful books. Oh, I think the book that I wanted to mention right now, though, that was Animal Miracles, and this is by Brad and Sherry Hansensteiger. And when we get into these other authors, you know, Animal Miracles is loaded with stories of animals that have come to the rescue of children or drowning families or any number of situations. You know that there is a feeling of distress or need that went out from those people that those animals picked up on telepathically and then came to the service and rescue of those folks who needed help. And with Plant Spirit Medicine, Elliot's talking about how we can get in touch with the energies around the plants that are, you know, more than just their healing aspects, but also the energetic aspects that the plants can carry. And the same with Talking with Nature and how we can work in harmonies with nature to, you know, accomplish our goals mutually, together, to the mutual benefit of all. It's a wonderful book. So I really encourage you to look those up. And somebody had asked us to put those on our website, so we've got those there down also on the website. Oh, but maybe you could show our next slide, Tony.
Certainly.
And so this one says, look deep into nature, and then you will understand everything better. And that's Albert Einstein.
Yeah, it's a marvelous quote, isn't it?
Yes, it is. Yeah, and there was a movie that came out some years ago. It's called I Am. It was a documentary of modern times and our awakening consciousness. And in it, speaking of the Heart Math Solution, he had a wonderful experiment with yogurt. And they had the producer of the movie sitting there talking, and he said, you mean yogurt can tell what I'm feeling and thinking? And they had a voltmeter, a microvoltmeter, an analog microvoltmeter, and they put that meter, the little receptor, into the yogurt, and then they had him, the producer, think about something that made him really angry, you know, and the meter went one direction really strongly, and the yogurt was sitting, you know, a couple of feet away from him, all on its own. There was no contact with the yogurt, but the yogurt is full of living little bacteriums, you know, the healthy bacteria, that are part of the same healthy bacteria that are inside of our own bodies. And so they have a communion one with another, what Einstein would call a spooky action at a distance. So they could harmonize. And so that said to me that the healthy bacteria inside of his own body were responding to his emotional state, and they were communicating with the healthy bacteria that was of the same ilk in the bowl of yogurt sitting right next to them. And so then they had him think of something that was very loving and heartwarming, and the meter went off in the other direction. It's sort of like the lie detector tests that were used by Clive Baxter on plants some years ago that were so inspirational and well noted. So with that, maybe you can show our next slide, which is a quote from William Shakespeare. And this one goes, one touch of nature makes the whole world kin. And I really feel that we are kin with all of the whole world. So that's a wonderful thought. This morning in my women's circle, we did an exercise with divining rods. And that was really wonderful to be able to see the ley lines by using, we took coat hangers and one of the gals, her husband had cut them so that we could make an L-shaped hanger, and we held the short part of the L and the long part, we held the short part in our hands and the long part we arranged so that it was pointing straight out in front of us. And then we walked across the deck out back, and she has a hot tub, and as we walked, the hanger stayed straight in front of us until we crossed the water pipe that led to the hot tub, and then those hangers swung in and crossed. And, you know, my grandfather was a dowser in the Midwest, and though a lot of folks in the Midwest, you know, in yesteryear especially, were a little cautious about psychic ability, but one of the main things that they all did really agree on was that, you know, you want to find a dowser when you're looking for a well, for the most part. And so my grandfather, he was a policeman, but he was also a dowser, and people would call him out. He'd go out there. He used a forked stick. He didn't use the coat hangers. He used a forked stick, and the stick would just pull him to whatever was happening. And there are, you know, not only is there water underground, but there are also electromagnetic lines. They call them ley lines, L-E-Y-L-I-N-E-S. And they have a definite beginning point and an ending point, and they're, you know, these fields of electromagnetic energy that travel through the earth. And a lot of the standing stones of Europe, I'm sure you're very familiar with this, Tony, are aligned on ley lines.
Oh, definitely, yes.
Yeah. And so then we also have underground water lines, which are different from pipes going to hot tubs, but still, they're there. They're flowing underground. And when you have ley lines and water lines combined together in the same place, those form power centers, and they create a field of energy that really has a strong effect on our consciousness. And we can teach ourselves to be sensitive to these earth energies. And a lot of the sacred sites of yesteryear, the sacred groves or the scrying ponds, those were placed on power centers in the old days.
Yes, Josephine, I am familiar with that from the, well, not just, but in part from the research I did when writing my book on the sacred sites.
Yes.
And it's especially true in England and I think throughout Europe, where typically churches were built on old pagan worship sites, and those were selected because of their particular qualities.
Mm-hmm.
But on the subject of dowsing, I've got something really curious. I have a very vivid memory of holding one of those dowsing sticks like you were talking about that your grandfather used, and the experience in my hand of feeling the pull and being dragged to a particular spot. But for the life of me, I can't think when I've ever done any dowsing.
Wow, that's
really
strange.
It's strange that I've got this memory, but I don't know that I've ever done any dowsing.
I wonder if it's a past life. Perhaps you were a dowser in a past life, because, you know, dowsers have been very important through time, probably as long as there's been agriculture. There's probably been a call for dowsers, so maybe that's what it is.
I have no idea. Maybe it's a calling.
Maybe it's a calling. Maybe you should pick up a forked stick and give it a try.
Maybe.
And then I did mention scrying ponds, and scrying ponds were very common on sacred sites in amongst the groves, and they are basically like a deep pond of water that you can sort of look into and not really see the bottom, but kind of get some impressions or feelings from it. And a lot of the sacred sites of yesteryear had scrying ponds in them. But as well, we can create a scrying pond with, you know, just any dark little area of water. I have an old bathtub in my backyard that a friend of mine helped me to sink down into the ground. And we've got some stones in there and some goldfish. And it's dark in there now because it's all covered with all of the white porcelain has long since been covered with algae. But you can look in there and you can kind of get an idea about, you know, any thoughts that you might have. It's sort of like gazing into a crystal ball is the same sort of an idea. That's scrying or looking at the tea leaves. There's a wonderful book called Reading Tea Leaves. I love the author. It's by a Highland seer, S-E-E-R. And, you know, I know that, for instance, in my block here that I live on, it used to be a swampy area. And I wonder if sometimes, you know, as I gaze into my pond out there in the backyard, if there might not have been a scrying pond naturally occurring in this area all on its own from way back, that perhaps the indigenous people of this place used to use to look in and muse and wonder. And, you know, there's also palmistry. People will do palmistry, and they'll look at their hands and see what's going on. today we did a little bit of that geomancy of looking out over the landscape to try to get a feeling. You know, it's just a way that we can kind of open ourselves up to some higher wisdom. And it doesn't so much matter to me what the source is or where it's coming from, but just that we have those insights coming to us. And, you know, a lot of this is what I would call good kitchen table wisdom from yesteryear. It's all divination. And what divination is giving the voice of the divine to an item from nature. We can also use cards. You know, I've had a lot of fun using the Angelic Messenger cards by Meredith L. Young Sowers, and also the medicine cards, which are animal pictures by Jamie Sams and David Carson. Those are very popular. And one of my friends actually had an amazing experience with the messenger cards. She was considering a divorce, and each time she asked the cards, should I do a divorce, and what would be the outcome of the divorce, she pulled up the joy card. I think it was 6 different times that she asked that she got the joy card.
Mm.
That's a pretty strong positive vote for moving ahead with that idea. And then I know friends who make their own deck of cards. They just use a regular pack of playing cards, and they select magazine photos, you know, and cut them out and tear them. It's a lot of fun. So yeah, it's a good art project. You just get out a rolling pin and some glue, and, you know, you might find that that's a really deep and meaningful thing for you to do. And maybe you even know somebody who'd like to jump in on that art project with you. And, you know, lay out the cards in whatever order you want. You can just pick a card for the day, or you can lay out the cards, some to the left, some to the right. Maybe the left represents your past and the right represents your future. Maybe the cards in the middle represent where you are right now. Any order that makes sense to you, it's all great.
Josephine, there's so much more I'd like to ask, and we do have some questions, but I'm afraid they're going to have to wait till next week now, because we are getting quite near the end. So let me just say that the link to next week's show can be found on Josephine's website, stepintomagic.com, and click on radio. If you've enjoyed the show, which we really hope you have, then please tell your friends. So, Josephine, do you have any parting words that you'd like to say?
Yes, I do. And thank you so much for asking. It's clear that ancient peoples communed deeply with their natural world, as is the case with the standing stones, ley lines, and the herbs of the rainforest. They solved mysteries and found answers that we are only just beginning to uncover with our modern minds. The alignment of the stars, the movement of water underground, and the healing properties of plants were all clearly seen by them. These days, we tend to see our connection with the natural world as a metaphorical one, but the ancients saw this connection as a literal one. Their depth of skill has not been lost to us. We can use our intention to reclaim it. We can connect with the elements of nature just like they did, on a deep and meaningful level, and thereby access a higher plane of our own and shared consciousness. So I like to talk to plants and rocks. I engage in conversations with clouds, and I've had hummingbirds tell me loud and clear what I needed to hear. And at times I've even moved the mist and cleared the air in order to see into the mysteries more deeply. So please, don't be afraid. Take your journal, go out amongst the trees and the bees and have fun and set yourself free. Call the rain. Inspirations will come to you. They may be just little ones, but that's enough. The important thing is to liberate yourself and get started. And I always love the wisdom of Khalil Gibran. And maybe you can show that last slide for us, Tony, before we sign off today. And this one says, "Forget not that the earth delights to feel your bare feet and the winds long to play in your hair." Isn't that a beautiful one?
That's really beautiful.
I really appreciate all of you taking the time to listen tonight. And in closing, I'd like to share this little blessing with you. As our gifts are given in love, they are received in love. And we honor their wise use and their increase for all concerned. And so it is.
Thank you so much for that, Josephine. As always, it's been a true pleasure talking with you and listening to you this evening. And I trust that everyone listening has learned lots about increasing psychic skills and moving in harmony with the Earth's energies. This has been show number PSY-1.14. We look forward to having all of you join us again next week when Josephine will be talking about how we can embrace our inner psychic.
Tony and I wish you all insight, wisdom, and magic as you pursue the journey of inner knowing. And I hold you all in light and in love. Thank you so much for listening. This is Josephine Lang. Until next week, good night.